non-attachment. For Christ in training, life's journey is all about getting to God. Now, you might know you are already there, but you probably do not live in that conscious truth most of the time. There are a lot of things that seem to get in the way. Detachment or non-attachment is about being free. It is about having no false gods. It is about pure focus and attention on God as your source. In a mindset of freedom, you realize that nothing of importance can be taken away from you. The great spiritual traditions of the world have called attention to attachments and addictions for millennia. In fact, apart from love and non-judgment, non-attachment is probably the most important universal message there is. The spiritual teachings of the world's religions relate that detachment contains the ultimate rewards, freedom and happiness. The Indian Upanishads state, "When all desires that dwell in his heart cease, then the mortal becomes immortal. When all the ties of the heart are severed here on earth, then the mortal becomes immortal." Buddhism expresses what are referred to as the Four Noble Truths. First, suffering is a fact of life. Second, suffering is caused by attachment. Third, liberation from suffering and the reinstitution of human freedom can happen only through detachment. Fourth, human effort toward detachment must involve all aspects of one's life in a deeply spiritual way. From the Greek philosopher Heraclitus to Jesus to Buddha, and from teachers and sages of all ages, come the doctrine that the ego satisfies its yearnings and attachments at the price of the soul. Jesus reminds us, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust consume and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven where neither rust nor moth consume and where thieves do not break in and steal." Be aware of what is truly important and give your energies to that. Jesus did not deny the importance of food or clothing or material needs. He found money necessary to pay taxes. He fed crowds of people. He even picked grain on the Sabbath to the dismay of the Pharisees because he and his disciples were hungry. That, by the way, was an interesting scene. Like so many instances in Jesus' life, it was simple and profound at the same time. Not only was he pointing out the importance of sustaining physical life, he was also demonstrating that you can get hung up on practically anything. You could get fixated on either eating or not eating. Either one is a trap and an attachment. Being detached does not mean being indifferent or wishy-washy. A spirit of detachment allows you to realize every desire or yearning you have is a shadow of the only one true desire of your heart, which is God, and all the qualities that are associated with God: peace, love, joy, strength. For Christ in training, it is so important to know that all of your yearnings for God are also God working in you. Your hunger for God, for oneness, for wholeness, this yearning is also God. It is the God within you urging you to go beyond the confines of your little personality. It is the God within you moving you toward a fuller realization of who you really are. Jesus was not kidding when he said, "I and the Father are one." He meant that as the truth. In other words, I have come to the fullest realization of God in me. I no longer yearn for God. My desire is fulfilled, for I am one with the Father. So as you are moving towards God, God is also moving towards you. You are not alone in your seeking. Your yearning is an expression of God seeking God. The God within you is seeking union with you and with all things. Getting to God consciously takes work. It takes focus. It takes commitment. You might recall Jesus related a number of stories about the bridegroom. They were all about being focused, committed, and aware. Then the kingdom of heaven, he said, will be like this. 10 bridesmaids took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 wise. Now they all fell asleep, which we all do, by the way. But some were prepared, almost as if they knew they might fall asleep. What a lesson right there. And they had enough oil for their lamps. The ones who were not prepared were shut out from the feast. It might seem a little unfair to get so angry at the women who did not trim their lamps and who ran out of oil or fell asleep while waiting. But looking closely, you can realize those stories are lessons in awareness, single-mindedness, and steadfastness. This kind of focus can only come about when you are not distracted by other things. The focus of Christ in training is to be unattached and waiting only for the bridegroom. The bridegroom, of course, is the living Christ, which is also the essence of Christ in training and being one with the Father. It is work, but it is worth it. By this time in your mission at being Christ in training, the lesson is clear. Everything of value requires work and dedication. The law of love, which was explored earlier, suggests that when you only love those who love you, then you are not doing much at all. It is when you choose to love those who are seemingly unlovable that you are doing the work of God. It is a challenge to go beyond your comfort zone, to go beyond the familiar. The land of non-attachment is one that you have traveled only marginally before this time. Whenever you enter a new country or initiate a new behavior, you can experience an awkwardness and discomfort. At those moments, it is very easy for the mind to key in on the difficulty. You feel and you convince yourself to go back to the familiar. Your conscious self usually wants to go from apprenticeship to mastery in one easy lesson. Notice how you would love to be able to drop the in-training part and just be it. Jesus once deeply loved a man who came to him and asked Jesus what he needed to do to be perfect, to be spiritually whole. The young man already was doing everything that was asked of him in obeying the commandments and the law. Jesus said, "There is still one thing you lack. Sell all that you have and give the money to the poor. It will become treasure for you in heaven. And come, follow me." And then one of the most heart-rending statements in Scripture was that the man, when he heard this, was overcome with sadness, for he was very rich. He walked away sadly because he had many possessions. It was just too frightening, too threatening for him to enter into that realm of non-attachment. The yearning for wholeness was there, but the energy to fuel that desire was lacking. Perhaps your prayer in situations like that could be, "Lord, I want to do this. I want to let go, but I am resistant and afraid. Help me. Show me." My wife Margot calls this stage of our spiritual development going through awkward. It is something we all do when learning something new. It is a natural part of things. My mind doesn't think it's natural. My mind thinks I should get it all at once. A while ago, I had the privilege of watching our first granddaughter, Michaela, learn how to walk. It was a marvelous and awe-inspiring experience. Because I do not have children of my own, I did not observe this phenomenon at an earlier time. I was even more moved at my first and perhaps my only opportunity to witness this milestone in human achievement. For some time, Michaela would simply stand and reach up her hand without even looking, just knowing and trusting someone would be there. Then she would guide me all over the house, stretching those new muscles and reveling in this newfound movement. It was wonderful just to be part of that trust. Then she would get to her feet by herself, toddle a few hesitant and jerky steps, and fall. Perhaps for a moment she would look around in wonder, then get up again, toddle a few more steps, fall, and do it all over again. It was absolutely remarkable to watch. There was no boredom, no anger, no frustration, and no impatience. There was just the doing and the learning, and nothing, absolutely nothing, got in the way. How is she doing that, I asked myself. How does she know so surely she can do something she has not yet achieved? I became aware that there is no negativity in her. There were no thoughts that said, I can't do this, or I'll never learn how to do this, or how many times am I going to have to go through this, or I wonder who's watching, or I wonder if they think I'm a klutz. There were none of these. These negative programs were just not there yet. I prayed this wondrous soul in this little body that by some miracle of nature, she would not take on this negativity that seems to befall us all. I also recalled a story about Milton Erickson, the father of modern-day hypnosis, who was stricken with polio during his teenage years. He was told that if he lived, he would never walk again. About that time, his mother gave birth to his youngest sister. As she grew, he observed her so closely that he taught himself how to walk again by watching and learning from her. Even as an adolescent, he did not say, well, I will try this 763 more times, and if I don't learn it by then, I quit. He knew. He knew it was possible for him to walk again. And most importantly, he was willing to go through that period of awkwardness that we all must go through to do something new or different, or growing or challenging. After deciding to move on, then comes awkward. I thought it was so sad that so many of us have forgotten how to learn from our past. When we were little, awkward was not something to be ashamed of or avoided. It was simply a way of gaining experience. It would be wonderful if we could adopt that same attitude again. I will show you, says God. Let go. Let go into my wisdom, and I will act with you and show you the way. Renounce and enjoy, a wise person once said. Love it, enjoy it, and know it will pass. Just as the rain falls on the righteous and the unrighteous, things will happen in life, but these things in no way need to affect who you are. You are a divine child of God, unconditionally loved, always. Let go, let God, and smile about it. Will your feelings of grief or sadness or disappointment disappear? Probably not. Will you still have desires? Surely. Will you have to be controlled by them? No. Will you have regrets? Of course. Will there be things you are sad about and sad about losing? Certainly. Is it scary to let go? Yes. Does it take work? Yes. Will you be free? Without a doubt. You are swimming upstream against what you have learned most of your life. You are letting go of what you think is comfort and safety, for what is the true desire of your heart, being one with God. If you dedicate yourself to the work of freedom from attachment, the mind will immediately jump in and try to convince you that you are not being sensible. It will tell you that you are crazy. It will tell you that you cannot possibly live or enjoy life without this or that attachment. Your ego will tell you life will be dull and boring, a very insipid thing. There will be no spice, no zest, and no energy to your existence. The fear that the mind and ego create will sometimes freeze you up again and put you to sleep. And then you might find yourself much like Edward Bear in the opening pages of Winnie the Pooh. Here is Edward Bear coming down the stairs now, bump, 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 on the back of his head, behind Christopher Robin. It is, as far as he knows, the only way of coming downstairs. But sometimes he feels that there is really another way, if he could just stop bumping for a moment to think of it. When you are experiencing this dilemma of bumping or thumping down the stairs, and knowing there must be another way, you can remind yourself that you are not alone in your efforts to change. Your Christ in training prayer in times like this can be, "Oh God, I realize I'm thumping down the stairs, drinking too much, porn on the internet, using food as a drug, using drugs as a drug, wrapped up in victimhood and self-pity, whatever your attachment is today. God, I do know there is another way of coming down the stairs, but I don't know what it is, or I can't stop doing what I'm doing. Help me. As best I can, Lord, I am turning my will and my life over to you to guide and to heal. As best I can, I let go of any form I think your help will take. I open myself to your love, your guidance, your direction, and I thank you, God, for answered prayer. Amen." Say this or something like it in your own words again and again. Repeat it, not so God can hear it. God hears it and answers your prayer immediately. Say it over and over again so that you can know and experience the answer to your prayer within yourself. I almost quit smoking years ago. I had been smoke-free for a month or so, and then all of a sudden it hit me. The compulsion that I had seemed bigger than life. It was certainly bigger than me. I wanted a cigarette. I also didn't want a cigarette. But I began to leave my apartment anyway. I remember walking to the little convenience store down the street, talking to myself the whole time. I was saying, "I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this." It was like someone else was in control of my body. Now I realize it wasn't someone else, but it was something else that was in control. It was my ego, and that "I want what I want when I want it" kind of mentality. Anyway, I smoked and smoked and kept trying and trying to quit. I'd quit for a day, then a couple of days, then I would smoke again. I would have a few minutes or hours, and then I would smoke again. I prayed. I invented affirmations. I got into exercising again. I prayed some more. Outside, I guess I looked fine, but inside, I was disgusted with myself. I became a closet smoker. I would smoke in the bathroom. and then use breath mints. I was living the facade and the illusion that I had quit. I would usually last a whole day at work and then succumb to buying a pack of cigarettes on the way home. I would smoke one or two and then throw the pack away, sometimes just out the car window. If I brought the pack home with me, after I smoked a few, I would put the rest under the faucet and soak them, throw them in the garbage. One of my most powerful memories was getting up one night and wanting a cigarette. Pulling the soaked pack out of the garbage, pulling one of the cigarettes out without breaking the filter off, I'm not sure why that was important, I got it out, unbroken, mind you, and I put it in the microwave to dry out, and then smoked it. It tasted horrible, as you can imagine. And as I was doing this, I recall a very wise voice in my mind saying, "If you had any doubts about being addicted to smoking, they are all gone now." I could have given up then and just resigned myself to a fate of a lifelong smoker, but I did not. I kept praying and working and praying and working on it. It seemed as if the only thing I was doing wrong was continuing to buy cigarettes and smoking them. One day in prayer, and feeling kind of desperate, my intuitive wisdom said to me, "Jerry, believe you are in the process of quitting. Your process has not reached physical manifestation yet, but it is coming. Let go of your guilt and fear and know you are in the process of quitting and God is with you." After getting that message, I did let go. I kept doing all the positive things I was doing, and if I slipped back to smoking, I did what I did and did not stay there. Soon after that, I'm not sure when, I had a day when I did not smoke. It was nothing dramatic. I had days like that before. In fact, it was so undramatic, I don't even know when it was. That was followed by another day, and another. I simply realized that I had not smoked in a few days. I kept praying, and now added gratitude to my prayer. A day at a time, I have not smoked in over 15 years. There are so many lessons here, I cannot begin to count them all. One of the most important is, even if you are still caught up in the addictive behavior, if you are sincere in your desire and praying wholeheartedly, then know, through your faith, that it is happening. You are in the process of quitting. Depend on God's power beyond even what your eyes and ears and other senses will tell you. God and you are in the process together. Know that it is true, and in time, in the fullness of time, it will manifest in the material world. This yearning for God and all the qualities of God, such as truth, oneness, love, and compassion, does not originate in the mind, nor can it be obtained or grasped by the intellect. The desire for God is a desire of the soul, and it needs to be given over to the soul, or what is sometimes referred to as your heart. It needs to be given over to the part of you that not only deeply desires the good, but that already knows the good. When you are attached to anything, food, gambling, drugs, your image of your body, your own opinion, being right, your expectations, the list is endless. When you are attached to anything, you lose your focus of God as your goal. Your unfocused mind and your runaway senses take over. You are asleep again. You have lost touch with the truth of who you are. Focus and intention, once lost, are difficult things to get back. Suppose you are focused on eating healthily and exercising, and one day your mind pops in and gives you the original McDonald's commercial, "You deserve a break today," and you take it. You confuse being good to yourself with indulgence. So you do not exercise, and you eat whatever you think you want, and you tell yourself, "I'll get back on my program tomorrow." How difficult is that? You know how difficult that is.